Do you know the number one thing that surprises engaged couples? Take a guess. The sheer amount of decisions they have to make while planning a wedding. Indoors or outdoors? How many guests? Are kids invited? Controversial. Which cake flavor? Seriously, how do you even begin to figure out what's right for you? That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to make every wedding decision a piece of cake, from choosing your dream wedding venue and vendors to deciding how to best spend your budget. With tons of customizable wedding websites, save the dates and invites, every detail will feel like you. Zola will even help you choose the gifts, experiences, and cash funds you really want. The next thing you know, you've planned your whole wedding all in one place. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Here we go. Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love. This is another Dolphins podcast. Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh House.
Thanks for tuning in to another Dolphins podcast, and happy Victory Monday to all who celebrate. After nearly 64 minutes of football, the New York Jets have once again been eliminated from playoff contention. Josh, it wasn't easy, but Miami got it done with a 32-26 win over New York.
What a game, man. That's all I could say. I mean, it gave us every bit of emotion as a Dolphins fan. I mean, it's kind of what we come to expect, and it's what we need to start realizing, right? It's the NFL, man. These divisional games are not easy, and just as we said, Aaron Rodgers went out there and looked like a pretty solid quarterback, but at the end of the day, the Dolphins did enough to come out on top, and as I said, Jake, we live to fight another day, man. So how are you doing on this Victory Monday? It's great to be able to talk about a win, because we would not have wanted to come on here if they lost.
All the emotions watching this game, man. You're laughing, you're crying. Aaron Rodgers is scoring on every single possession up until the fourth quarter. You wonder if he had some sort of home field advantage in Miami. 41 years old, he went down in there, the body feeling good with the warm weather. I'm not entirely sure, man. But God, back and forth, what a game for the Miami Dolphins. Josh, I'm just going to throw the spotlight on you. Do you know who leads the NFL on completion percentage this season?
It's got to be Tua, right? Was that you trying to set me up for that? Yeah, of course it's Tua. And we keep seeing the graphic. I think he's on pace to break Drew Brees' record, right? I'm not sure I have the number in my head, but we know he missed four games. But what Tua's done since he's come back has been absolutely impressive as all hell. So that's one of those questions, Jake, I didn't know, because obviously it's Tua. And despite what some people think, I'm still, one of those diehard simp fans that, just love to watch him go out there and carve up a team, even if it is the Jets without Sauce Gardner.
Tua, in seven games since coming back from injury, 1,973 passing yards, 15 touchdowns, one interception, a quarterback rating of 109.8. His 74.5% completion percentage is best in the NFL. Josh, who has the best completion percentage of any quarterback in the last 3 years?
See, this one I don't know, but I'm going to say it's Tua. You can tell me it's Tua?
Since Mike McDaniel has taken over in Miami, Tua Tagovailoa has a 69% completion percentage. Very nice. The best of any quarterback in the last 3 years. Josh, let me ask you this one. Who has the best career completion percentage in the NFL?
You're going to tell me it's Tua again?
Yeah, man. His 68% Jeez. Completion percentage is above Drew Brees, man. What a stellar performance from Miami's quarterback. And what made me so frustrated about this performance, above all else, man, it wasn't easy. This felt like an old-fashioned So Dolphins game, because for the entire first half, It felt like they were settling for the sad field goals. And you had the team, you know, chuckling, feeling good on the sideline. There were even some plays where I think the Dolphins were trying to get the Jets to bounce off sides. And you saw Tua like kind of go up to the line and say, ah, we almost got you, that type of thing. And there were times, man, where I was ready to lose my mind, because for a team at 5-7, your playoff hopes are on the line, to kind of, I don't want to say they didn't care about winning, because they did, but they were not scared of losing this game whatsoever. And that's why I went to overtime. And I think that was such a queasy experience, man. And so I have some massive gripes with the offense. I thought it got way too cute at times. Maybe going for a no-look pass on 2nd and 10 at one point wasn't great. But overall, man, I wanted to start with the Tua stats, because he has just been flat-out incredible. And he was a big reason, well, probably the biggest reason why the Dolphins were able to win today.
Yeah, man, and this is his third 300-yard passing game, I believe, in a row, correct? Consecutive in franchise history. I think only Dan Marino has done that, and what we've seen now, too, again, like you've said, he's just been an entirely different player. But I also, Jake, at times, you know, was thinking, why are they showing Tua smiling on the sideline with Jalen Waddle as they're getting ready to go down, what was it, 6 or whatever it was? I mean, that might just be the old head of me, but that did rub me a little bit the wrong way seeing that. But jokes on us, right? Tua got the last laugh, and he went out there, and based on all accounts, he was the guy that, you know, told this team to step up, got a little bit of that dog, that bark in the huddle at the end of the game, and, you know, really elevated this team as we, you know, want to see him do on the field, not only out there, but in the huddle. So whatever it was the perfect storm, and somehow the Dolphins managed to pull this one out. I had to laugh because you look at the little ticker that shows, like, the probability, and it's just like a roller coaster, man, all over the map. And at one point, I think the Jets had an 80% chance to win. That was probably when they went up there at the end, but you can't get to a time of low unless, a minute on the clock? I mean, that's just what we're going to start saying at this point, because with the game on the line, man, he went down there, he scored a touchdown, hit Hill, then followed it up with Waddle, same play. I mean, I don't know, man. It was an impressive performance from Tua Tagovailoa, as much as, you know, everyone wants to try to diminish it, I guess.
And there were some massive bumps in the road. Just off the top of my head, man, I thought it was so weird that you bring in Jeff Wilson for one drive. He has a reception. He has a run to move the sticks. That was this is the one thing for the rest of the game I was watching. Like, we're going to see Jeff Wilson again, right? Why aren't we seeing Jeff Wilson again, right? Because the interior rushing attack, man, has just looked like an absolute struggle for this team. And it was a major concern. Raheem Mostert, I don't know if it was a surprise because he was limited throughout the week with a lingering hip injury, but he does not go. And man, the Miami Dolphins just cannot run the ball up the middle. I think there's a couple different things that go into this, but it was just so frustrating to see that it seemed like every first down for a while it was still, we're going to try to run it right up the gut with Achan, and it just wasn't working.
Yeah, and I was upset. I thought we were going to see a lot more Jeff Wilson, and then you start to see that sprinkled in, and you're like, okay, this is what we want, that hard-nosed, you know, runner between the tackles. And like you said, man, I don't know what was going on with personnel. A little bit of it seemed like Jonnu Smith was kind of taken out of the game at certain points, right? He kind of had to get in Mike McDaniel's face to even get some reps. So Mike McDaniel, definitely some questionable personnel decisions, maybe some questionable play calls throughout the game. But again, they found a way when it mattered most to overcome it, but definitely not a perfect performance by any stretch of the imagination. And I mean, again, this was a 3-win team, man, and the Dolphins barely got out of this one.
Javon Achane, 14 carries for 24 yards, a long of 7. He did have a rushing touchdown. Also, he caught 6 of 7 receptions, or targets, excuse me, for another 45 yards. And Josh, just speaking about those questionable coaching decisions, they really loved this screen pass to Devon Achane, where he'd try to bounce outside of like it was a swing pass and cut right back inside. And man, we both write about this team for the Finsider. I wrote a story over the weekend about how Devon Achane was preparing for a stout Jets defense. Like, there's no ignoring that this is a good Jets defense. Achane was actually bottled up to like 3 yards per carry the one time he was available last year. First thing he said, it starts with the defensive line. They are a great team. The screen worked the first time. Cool. I think the screen worked the second time. The third time that you are going at Jets defensive captain Quinnen Williams, he has the big C on his chest. They have no Sauce Gardner. You know, their secondary is looking a little weak. I was just a little concerned to see that happening 3 times in a row. And then you have the third time where Achane gets blown up. It's just, there were some scenarios where your guys going in motion that have nothing to do with the play. It just seemed like Mike McDaniel needed to really chill out sometime.
And what's funny is I don't think we saw it then again in the rest of it. Well, maybe I'm mistaken. I don't think we saw it again in the rest of the game, but they ran it they ran it 3 times there in that first half. And I tweeted out that it's like cheesy AF, and I didn't mean really anything negative by that, right? We play Madden, we all have that one play that, you know, okay, we're gonna get 15, 20 yards, but you don't just keep running it and it's spamming. And that's kind of what the Dolphins did on that first drive. But you mentioned him being you know, saying about how good that defensive line is, man, 1.7 yards per carry for Devon Achane up the middle. They did get Jalen Wright more involved, like you mentioned, but he still just seems like an afterthought. So that Jets defense definitely caused a solid matchup for the Dolphins. I don't know how you felt, Jake, but I kind of want to not only pour one out for our boy Teron Armstead, but kind of give our flowers to Patrick Paul, who then came in and played pretty solid as well, right? Because we did see Armstead go down, and then Patrick Paul came in, and Armstead just looked sad as hell on the sidelines. So that's why I wanted to pour one out for our homie.
Yeah, so Teron Armstead hasn't practiced since week 10. He's been dealing with the knee injury, Josh. I remember going back to last year, I think we wrote a story because the first time he practiced that season was the Eagles game. Going into that, it was gearing up for that. So you're not going to see him go out there, and there's a lot of work that he puts into being – active on game days. And not only Josh, is he active on game days, he's one of the best left tackles in the NFL. And this year he's only missed one game, and it's the year you draft the replacement Patrick Paul, who I think looks pretty comfortable out there. I think he's had some moments, obviously some moments he looks like a rookie, but for Teron Armstead, man, it's just so sad to see, because I think he leaves the game in the first or second quarter. They cited a knee injury, and it, you know, he walked off the field and he's sitting on the sideline, right? That's not really something you see for injured players a lot of the time, right? You're going into the blue tent, you're going into the locker room, you see him on the sideline just pouring one out, and I don't want to speculate, man, but you just kind of think that, like, you know, he's put so much work into this, you just wonder if he can still reach that peak awesome left tackle that he's been for 9 weeks. You know, he's only missed one game this season, been an absolute stud for the Dolphins, a leader. You hear even other side of the ball, Chop Robinson, talking about how important Armstead has been to his development. So Armstead, you know, people have always gripped, like, he doesn't play and he's not always available on Sunday, but I mean, he's always there six other days of the week and he's always putting in the time. And so, yeah, I really hope he can come back and play, man, but you just feel sad for him. There's no better way to put it.
Yeah, and I think it was the first thing I saw when I got on Blue Sky or was Twitter, one of those. You know, you see just that picture of him on the sideline, and you just, like, it just rips your heart out, because I think he was even discussing potentially, you know, retiring at some point. So to just think, you know, how much he's tried to get out there, battled his ass off, and became that important, you know, difference maker on that offensive line. He's made everybody better, like you mentioned, Chop Robinson on the other side as well. But again, Patrick Paul came out with that face mask, and it didn't look like they really lost a step. So again, I'm not an offensive lineman. We have our own guy for that, right? Eric does the offensive line stuff, but we will continue to watch what Patrick Paul becomes, because it looked like, at least in this small sample size, that he at least belonged out there, and that's more than you can say for some of those other offensive linemen that Chris Greer drafted in the past.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of offensive linemen Chris Greer have drafted in the past, another roughing the Liam Eichenberg penalty, man. What is going on in here? Like, for all the players we get mic'd up, I think we, at this point, we demand Liam Eichenberg be mic'd up if he's going to get this many just roughing the offensive lineman penalties.
Yeah, we want him mic'd up, and I think you said you even want a book written about the
Pelosi.
The Pomplosi. So yeah, we need that injecting our veins, because I mean, whatever he says, I mean, that guy was the defensive lineman was very pissed off at him.
But dude, just watching this game, like, it was just so frustrating, because this isn't a game, like, before the show or before the game, we were talking, like, this is an opportunity for the Dolphins to play a statement game. Breece Hall isn't active, and all of a sudden you have Aaron Rodgers go for 300 yards for the first time since 2021, man. 2021 against the Chicago Bears, I believe it was the last time he goes for 300 yards. But I really think that for the struggles the defense had, I want to get your thoughts on how the Miami Dolphins offense really operated in the first half, because I just look at the play-by-play, man, and in the first half, you just have – let me see here. Sorry to put myself on the spot here. Fourth and goal at the one from the Jets 21. Sorry. Fourth and one from the Jets 21, Jason Sanders, 39-yard field goal. After that, fourth and four from the Jets 6, Jason Sanders, 24-yard field goal. After that, Jason Sanders, 57-yard field goal. Good, and that was as time expired to give Miami a 15-13 lead at half. Jason Sanders, AFC Special Teams Player of the Month for November. Much deserved. No hate on him whatsoever, man. But when you have fourth and one twice in the first half of a game with your playoff hopes on the line, when you're in a tight game against a division rival, against a team that's without some of their top players, I don't want to settle for sad field goals. I don't want to be a hater. Jason Sanders was awesome, but I know how sad field goals end when the clock's at zero.
Yeah, and I mean, at first we were queasy as heck, right? Didn't he mix the extra point early on? And we're like, oh God, no, not this Jason Sanders. But yeah, he was money, but you're right, man. I mean, like maybe they realized, you know, or maybe they came into this with a, you know, you only need to score X amount of points. This is the Jets, you know, we're going to go in there. We need to just get points on the board and come out of this with a win. But you cannot, you know, be settling for field goals in those situations. I mean, you see all the elite teams around the league, and I hate to use that word, but all the, you know, playoff contest, the Detroit Lions, I mean, they are some of the ballsiest play calling you'll ever see. So, I don't like settling for field goals in those situations. And haven't seen necessarily Mike McDaniel settled for field goals in those situations. So I still think he's, you know, dealing with this stuff in his mind at times. We joked, right? Third and one, it went to a commercial break. And we knew he was going to come out and overthink the play. And they did, right? I think the pass got broken up and they settled for a field goal. So he's still dealing with his, you know, growing pains as well, but I can't explain that, man. And you just want to expect the Dolphins to go out there and score touchdowns like we saw more so in the second half. But those selling for sad field goals, man, that's the perfect way to put it.
Speaking of second half touchdowns, man, that drive in overtime, I even tweeted, man, right before this drive started, I tweeted out, can we please just line up, run 8 plays, and score a touchdown? Because that was the issue. It wasn't that the Dolphins were playing poorly. It was just like they were trying to get so cute sometimes, and you get an illegal formation, you get a false start. You just wanted them to line up, two ahead, time in the pocket. The pressure wasn't really getting to him. Line up, find the open receiver. Like, it was so weird. Jonnu Smith is targeted once, and it's on a play where Tua's not even looking at him. The first pass of overtime, you can tell that Tua's locked in because it's an incomplete pass. Not that he just threw it at a player who was covered. Everyone was covered. He rolled out to the left. He threw it out of bounds. Composed. It was absolutely awesome. And then the next two plays were almost identical. And we talk about, you know, maybe going back to the well one too many times with the Devon Achane screens. It kind of felt like that's what the Dolphins did with Jonnu Smith for 20 yards. And then my favorite play of the game was Jonnu Smith, the 14-yard reception, Josh, just because he got up and started just screaming. He was just looking off into space and just screamed, took another breath in, and screamed. And that's just how I felt to be a Dolphins fan watching this entire game. And then obviously you had to mix it up, go to Devon Achane. Tyreek Hill got involved before Jonnu Smith, the touchdown reception. Man, just a clean drive from this Dolphins offense that had me ripping my hair out, because there's no reason you should have scored 6 points in the first quarter. There's no reason you should have been held out in the third quarter. You just got to line up and play ball, and it shouldn't be this complicated when the idea of we lose and the playoffs are out of our mind is lingering. Like, it's just so weird.
Yeah, there was no urgency, I guess. And you wonder what took him so long also to get Jonnu Smith involved. I know that Tua Tagovailoa kind of said it was someone him, but it sounded like in overtime he basically went to Mike McDaniel from what Tua said. I didn't get to hear what Mike McDaniel's words on it, but it sounded like Jonnu Smith said, you know, get me more involved. And to see him kind of take over that overtime, I mean, that is what he can do to this this offense. And it's just impressive. And I have to tip your hat to Tyreek Hill as well, right? And Jalen Waddle. I mean, those were – Jalen Waddle, I mean, you kept saying he was going to have that game again, and he did, didn't he? He went out there and caught, 9 of 12 targets, 99 yards, and then Tyreek Hill, 10 catches on 14 targets, 115 yards, and that touchdown. I believe that was only was it his second 100-yard? I might have third 100-yard game. Either way, not as many 100-yard games as we would have liked this year, but those guys came up big in the game, and we needed it. So, spinning out of control here with the whole offense.
What'd you think of Tyreek Hill scores the touchdown? What'd you think of them coming back and running the same exact play with Waddle? Like, that's just the theme of this show, is that Mike McDaniel maybe had, like, he was playing Madden as, like, a 12-year-old, just running the same four plays. Like, this one works, this one doesn't work. It was so weird.
Yeah, and it's almost like Tua. I mean, that's what Tua does, right? You can process that. You probably saw that they had Manny. You knew those outs were open. But I think he even said afterwards, we went to our best player for the touchdown, and then we came back to our other best player for the two-point conversion. And it was just funny. It was just copy and paste. Same throw, same route. It was just, it was nice to see the Dolphins, you know, spam that Madden style and to see it work. I mean, and to see Tua Tagovailoa take the game over, right? I mean, yeah. I know a lot of people are looking at this one, and, you know, you can see his passing chart. And all year long, they're taking away the deep ball. I mean, it's all a compacted thing. But, you know, the hate that he receives, I don't think there's things that he's going to ever be able to do to change some of those haters' minds. But I don't care how it gets done. If you're going to have to throw screens and things like that behind the line of scrimmage, those, you know, 10, 15-yard intermediate balls, whatever it is, Tua Tagovailoa played out of his mind, you know, honestly, since he's returned. But this one, he really took, you know, grabbed this one by the balls and took it over when we needed him to, with our season lingering, hanging in the wits.
One other guy on offense that needs some flowers, Malik Washington, man. He was only targeted once, but on special teams, you know, realize why that the Dolphins kept putting him back there. He had the fumble last week against the Packers, but came right back, had nearly a 50-yard return. He trucked over a kicker. Literally everything you want from a kick returner, man. It was a great sight to see.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to hate on Braxton Barris, but like I thought about it yesterday, I was like, have we ever seen him take, like, you know, take the game? Like,
he was the safest guy ever. He was never going to
start everything. But... yeah, Malik Washington, man, he looked like he would, like, he took a step and then he's like, you know, I'm just going to go right through this kicker. So yeah, man, we needed that bad, and that was, you know, I'm going to say that's what saved Danny Crossman's, you know, lifeline here. But yeah, man, Malik Washington really stepped up, and hopefully he becomes more a part of that offense, right? That one target. Odell Beckham only had what? One target as well, one catch. I mean, what's going on with that, man?
It's funny, dude, because like you even mentioned, like Jalen Wright got more involved. Two carries, like the way this offense was. No, dude, like that's. But he was out there. You see him going in motion in all these plays, and you see him being involved for two. Like just the way the Miami Dolphins operate, it's like we're gonna have Alec Ingold run this way, and then have Devon Achane run behind nobody the other way. It just seemed like the Miami Dolphins are the much more talented game. Or team in these games. You don't need to have these feeling out sessions and then get into these awkward, geez, we can't make it on 4th and 1. I think that's such a killer. And I do wonder, man, like Aaron Brewer is awesome. I am not hating on Aaron Brewer. Is this kind of maybe the downside of having someone who's so small there at center? Obviously, you want to try to burrow in behind the guards there, and having a couple better guards might help. But I do wonder if you just don't have that push from center. You have someone a lot smaller because he fits the scheme so well, being able to roll out, being able to hit the second level. But maybe you can't get that inch when you need it on 4th down. I don't know.
No, that's a good point. And then you got Brewer, who's, you know, like you said, a little bit undersized. And then you got Liam Eichenberg on one side, and, you know, not the best. So he's, yeah, that could definitely be have something to do with it. What do you think about the defense, Jake? I mean, I feel like Zach Sealer kind of, I was going to say, late in that game, I think Zach Sealer just, you know, kind of took things over. The whole defense kind of stepped up when they needed to. But, man, for most of that game, it was just, they look like Swiss cheese. Again, you know, 35 games, I think it's been since Aaron Rodgers had a, 300-yard performance. And, of course, that's so Dolphins had to be this one.
What a sad performance, man. Zach Sealer, 2 sacks. He leads the team with 6. Jordan Brooks, another sack. Jordan Brooks missed a sack on 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers, came back, finished the play, and was celebrating when the Dolphins were losing. Another player, Aaron Rodgers, broke out of another sack at 41 years old. These are the scenarios, man, that has me just ripping out my hair as a Dolphins fan, because there are a lot better quarterbacks next week. The Miami Dolphins are going to face a lot better quarterback. And if you can't bring down 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers, you are horrified. You are absolutely horrified of what's going to happen against a team like the Houston Texans. You have hope that things can get better, but it was a step up from the Thanksgiving loss to the Packers, where you had, 23 missed tackles. But Miami continues to be one of the worst teams when it comes to missing tackles. I think some of that goes to, all right, Calais Campbell's a little old. Maybe he's very old and he's still awesome. Sorry, I didn't mean it like that. But what I meant is he's going to overextend sometimes and he's going to go for it. And sometimes he's going to miss, but that's his only opportunity. So it's going to be a missed tackle. But if it's either going to be a missed tackle or not be involved in play at all, if that makes sense. So I know some of that stuff has to do with it, man, but you're just let down. You see Javon Holland just kind of miss an interception. You just don't see these emerging stars or these guys taking over on defense. You just see a lot of guys looking a little helpless and hoping the game doesn't come towards them.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that defense got to be completely revamped. I mean, I don't know what it is. And there's even times when you see, like, the corners bailing, like, in third down situations where you would hope that Jalen Ramsey's, you know, up on the line pressing a Garrett Wilson, who caught 4 of 6 targets against Jalen Ramsey, according to Next Gen Stats. He allowed the most receiving yards allowed by Ramsey as a nearest defender since 2017, which is 97 yards. So we saw Jalen Ramsey give some big plays a little bit, but I think a lot of that might have been, you know, making him force him to stay off and, you know, play back. But I don't know, man. That's, you know, I'm not Anthony Weaver or anything like that, but this defense looked dismal at times, and I just don't know. You know, you could hope for Bradley Chubb to come back. That might help get the pressure there a little bit quicker, but it looks like, based on Next Gen Stats, again, Aaron Rodgers was pressured on 14 of 42 dropbacks. It was his highest pressure rate, quickest pressure rate under 2.5 seconds, and he completed 19 of 23 of those attempts. So I'm trying to be a nerd here and throw out some analytics, but basically the Dolphins were able to get the pressure there. It just, Aaron Rodgers got the ball way too fast, and the secondary just couldn't wrap up and do things like that. So yeah, man, you're playing CJ Stroud coming off a bye, that Texans offense, you're not going to get away with some of the mistakes you did against the Jets.
Yeah, I didn't think it was Jalen Ramsey's best game, but I also didn't think it was terrible. Oh no, you gave up yards to Garrett Wilson, you gave up yards to one of the better wide receivers in the NFL, and he almost had an incredible interception where you kind of hoped that that'd be the takeaway, the balance it out, like, you get a couple on me, but I'm gonna get this takeaway to make it back. Dude, Rodgers was awesome. I don't know if he could just was able to tell the blitzes where they were coming and knew exactly where to go with the ball, just that wisdom of being in the NFL for so long. But then there were some situations, man, where Kader Kohou just kind of looked helpless at times, where he was just kind of falling off his guy. And that was also concerning too. It's just so strange to me. The week you have Kendall Fuller back, the week you're like, yeah, our secondary is going to be feeling pretty good, I'll even go out and say, man, I don't think Kendall Fuller plays bad. I don't think he's, you know, a liability out there on defense. But then you have Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson still catch 16 of 21 targets for 225 yards and a touchdown, 23 yards and a touchdown. It was just so weird to see how Miami just failed to have answers play after play after play. And the Jets could just simply do what they want. To be able to go down the field every single drive and score is absolutely insanity. Until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, like you mentioned.
Then he got
it. Yeah, and like you mentioned, it was with Breece Hall, right? I mean, without Breece Hall. And then we kind of said Braylon Allen can run hard, but I mean, there was that one fourth down, I think he just like bulldozed through somebody. So I don't know, man. The Jets had some playmakers on the outside. They obviously made this a game. And at some point, man, we were definitely back on the ropes, but the Dolphins managed to claw their way out and do enough. But yeah, man, I don't know. This defense definitely is revamped, and they need to step up, because this isn't going to – you're not going to be able to beat the Texans as bad as – you know, despite how bad they've been playing, or any of these teams, honestly, as we saw, if you continue this way.
And Calais Campbell's not going to get better in December and January. Jordan Poyer, for whatever positives you want to try to squeeze out of that, he's not going to get better in December and January. You need some of the younger guys, man. And that's kind of just goes back to the biggest issue with this team. And it's the Chris Greer and it's the drafting. Like, Cam Smith, like, I don't want to blame injuries. He wasn't playing too well before the injury. Channing Tindall, like, these are guys you need to have involved. Like, I'm sorry.
I had to laugh though.
But like, you need these guys involved. Like, we thought there was depth at linebacker. That's, you know, doesn't exist. Zach Sealer leading the team in sacks, man. You just need other players to be answers, and it just hasn't been the case. Jordan Brooks, I think, was solid, but man, you can't let 40. You can't be a middle linebacker of an NFL defense. Don't get me wrong, he came back, and on the same play, he did come back and get the sack. But you cannot be letting 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers escape you when the season is on the line like that, man. You need a lot of Pepto to stomach something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, shame on me. I guess I said Bradley Chubb might not change. He would definitely help a lot with this defense. But I mean, like you said, man, there's just some tackling issues, some philosophy. You know, everything about this defense just needs revamp. But at times, man, earlier in the year when they needed it, when Tua out, I mean, I thought they stepped up and, you know, played well. So I don't know, man. Maybe it is.
They
just
were
these
also
old dudes
playing Will Levis, sadly.
And Mason Rudolph then came in, and yeah, okay, good point.
The Colts
kind of overlooked those,
like,
things.
16 points. Okay.
Aren't the Colts like our lifeline, though? Aren't they the only reason the Dolphins still have a little bit of hope if they beat the Broncos? Or did I misread that?
I think there's actually a couple ways, and I don't want to get too deep into this.
Yeah, let's not. I don't want to be sad either, because...
No, dude, I actually feel like the Dolphins are in an okay spot. They're 6-7. They're not in a good spot. But in terms of having hope, like in the hope of George Costanza, let's get this hope to kill us, I think the Dolphins have a pretty good shot, because the Colts, they were on a bye this week. They are 6-7, and they're going to play the Denver Broncos at 8-5 next week. So what's interesting here, Josh, is we need the Broncos to lose what? Two games. Two of the last five. Two of the last four. Sorry. Here I am. Here we're mathing, Josh. Watch out. So the thing that interests me the most is if the Broncos, the idea is that the Broncos and Colts play next week. And everybody is saying that after that, the Colts schedule is very hard. So everyone's saying, like, we need the Broncos to win this game. Like, we need the Broncos to win this game. However, dude, when I look at a team that's 6-7, like the Dolphins, I'm never going to say your schedule is going to be easy. And when I look at the Colts, having games against both Tennessee and Jacksonville, two divisional games against two other very, very wacky teams, I would not say those are guaranteed wins for the Colts whatsoever. So in reality, man, I do think I, like, famous last words, this is easily going to blow up in my face. I kind of think I want the Colts to beat the Broncos because I think I could see the Colts losing in other ways through as the pressure of, like, must-win games throughout the season. Like, just like the Dolphins, man, I think the Dolphins should not be guaranteed to win against the Browns, guaranteed to win against the Jets. Like, this is a team that has some major, major issues. But however, too, man, you have the Chargers. They're at 8-5. They have a very tough schedule. Denver's on that schedule for them too. You wonder if they could drop a little bit. I think it's simple, man. I think it's simple. If the Dolphins went out, we'll be fine.
Now, last question, and you don't have to be put on the spot here, but is this the big game this week? I mean, I feel like the Texans coming off a bye. I think before the year that was probably, you know, one of those AFC, you know, favorites. Is this that game that's really stepping out where if we can beat the Texans this week, then you're going to start feeling that 7-7 and all the real hope in the hunt, or is it going to be that Niners game? The Jets, though, now even scare me, right? I mean, like, you said it best, man. Jameis Winston should not be taken lightly, and the Browns, we should not be taking Aaron Rodgers at his age lightly. None of these games are going to be easy. So I don't know why I put you on the spot there.
The Texans game is the hardest, for sure. For sure, the Texans is the hardest. They're the only game above 500. San Fran, I think, is also 6-7. They actually looked really good against a Bears team that is very hopeless, I think, after they fired Eberflus. But, God, yeah, no, like I could see it, man. We saw Miami go to Los Angeles and beat the Rams 23-15, a team that just scored 44 points against the Buffalo Bills. So, like, we've seen the Dolphins beat good teams, and that's kind of better teams. I know there's still the whole theme. But I could so see that you beat Houston, man, and then you just fall to Cleveland, and then that's the season or something, and you get just, you know, a bunch of sad faces on a cold sideline. Like, that's a Dolphins fan.
Yeah, and that's what we're preparing ourselves for. But, I mean, it does feel so good, though, pulling this out right against the Jets. And we would have just been here just, like, so sad, man, if they would have found a way, which it looked like at times. Like, again, they were going to find a way. And you see Stephen Ross on the sideline. Like, he was into that game. Like, I don't know that anybody is truly on the hot seat in this situation. But coming on top of the Jets feels good, man. Victory Monday.
Never, never, never say no to a Victory Monday. The Dolphins won. When we're talking about this game in the offseason, that's all we're going to think about. It's not, you know, ifs, ands, or buts. It's the fact that the Dolphins won. And hopefully they can build on this. And most importantly, because of the win, build some momentum. Hopefully keep these playoff hopes alive. Tua Tagovailoa, one last time in the last seven games since returning from his concussion. 1,973 passing yards, 15 touchdowns, one interception, a quarterback rating of 110. On top of that, the Dolphins are averaging about 28 points. Hey, right there, that's what you need. That's a recipe for the playoffs. But that is it. That is all we have on today's episode of Another Dolphins Podcast. We hope everyone goes out and has an awesome Victory Monday. We will be back throughout the week as we start preparing for the Houston Texans. But until then, fins up.
Fins up.